Welcome to Shitpost. The day is February 4th, 2021. We're going to take a bit of a slight departure from the kind of thing we usually cover on this show to talk about game stock. In the last couple of months, what's known as retail investing has blossomed. This is investing on small scales from a consumer standpoint. In the last couple of weeks, a major upheaval in the stock market has happened. Redditors, most of them coming from the subreddit Wall Street Bets, bought loads and loads of GameStop stock. And by doing so, were able to inflate the price of the stock in a way that enabled some investors to make a lot of money, and more crucially here, created a short squeeze on Melvin Capital, a large hedge fund that had shorted GameStop stock. This combination of a get-rich-quick type prospect in combination with some good old revolutionary punishment of the ultra-wealthy drew a lot of people who don't traditionally pay attention to financial markets into the game. Over the last few days, as I'm recording this, the stock price for GameStop has fallen dramatically. A lot of people will point to the limiting of trading on certain stock market apps for that fall. And there's also a pretty stark possibility that simply the hype has died down. And although the hype may have quieted for now, I think that the effects, or what was sort of awoken here, is likely to continue forward far into the future with us, should we choose to carry it.
There once was a stock that put to sea. The name of the stock was GME. The price blew up and the shorts dipped down. Hold my bully boys, hold.
Soon may the Tendy Man come to send a rocket into the sun. One day when the trading is done, we'll take our gains and go.
She had not been 2 weeks from shore.
And joining me to talk all things meme stock, we've got Dan from the internet, as you may know him. He is the host of TDIF, The Power Report, and Audio Face. A bunch of shows, Dan. Thanks for taking a break from all of those to join us here on Shitpost.
Oh, thanks for having me. As many of us do here, we use the shows to fill a part of our heart that is not currently being filled. So it's always good to go on another show and continue that sort of thing as it goes.
Well, it's a real pleasure, and I'm glad you're joining me, because I have to admit, when it comes to this Wall Street bet stuff, this GameStop stock, AMC, I guess BlackBerry and Nokia got in on it at some point. Like, I am way out of my element here. So I'm really glad you could join and try to help me and the listeners sort of understand what's going on here. You know, I just ran through a brief rundown in the vaguest sense of what's been happening with Wall Street bets. But I think maybe a question you could help me understand the answer to first off is, what is Wall Street bets to begin with? Like, I know it's a subreddit, but what makes it stick out? What do people go there to try to do and achieve?
Yeah, that's a really good, excellent starting question, Jared. And I think right in the wheelhouse of what Shitpost listeners might be into, Wall Street Bets is an internet community, of course, on Reddit. And up to this point, I have said that it's up to tomfoolery, but this is Shitpost, so I can just say these are kind of clowns sometimes. And I mean that in like the most respectful way, and also the most like cringe hurts to look kind of way. On any given day, on a normal day of Wall Street bets, and I've been like looking at the subreddit on and off for a couple years, you have Wall Street memes of people making ridiculous jokes and ideas of betting all of their life savings into like ridiculous purchases for YOLO kind of motives. There's a lot of kind of ableist language, unfortunately, that's used kind of as a joke, like autist and the R word kind of as a fun thing. And you do get a little, some occasional tinges of the right wing, especially kind of the Trump MAGA loving fringes of things. The Wall Street Bets character arguably is like a kind of a mock-up of Trump with the hair. But I think for the purposes of this case, the more political aspects of Wall Street Bets were less in the forefront here. And the other aspect of Wall Street Bets, in addition to being like a meme page, almost like a financial spinoff of the Donald, but it's also a place where you have a really nice mixture of people who are in the financial sector, used to be in the financial sector, learning about the financial markets. And so they have a nice blend of information that's kind of flowing through together. And on any given day, most of it's nonsense, but that information and that knowledge is there. And so I think that begins to paint a picture of what Wall Street Bets is and what ultimately, how it became the catalyst for the fun proceedings of the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, so, you know, that takes us right into, you know, the fact that Wall Street Bets has been in the headlines for the last, what, week or 2 weeks now. A lot of the users on Wall Street Bets just sank absurd amounts of money into the stock for GameStop, which is a video game retail store that has been, I guess, diplomatically, we could say, down on its luck recently.
Shellacked.
Shellacked. Completely fucked. It was never a good store, but...
I mean, what, Jared? Did you not personally take pride in getting $2 for video games that you spent $50 on in mint condition?
I gotta say, even when I was young, I just could not get behind that. So what made these people on Wall Street Bets who, you know, are discussing the stock market, shitposting, going absolutely bananas on that forum, what started the whole GameStop saga? I mean, was there a catalyst for this? Can you give me sort of a better idea of like why this happened?
Well, yeah, there was some chatter online about basically the idea of these distressed assets. Speaking more broadly of stock market trends over the past year, especially as they've been affected by COVID-19, there was a little bit of a shock in March 2020 where the markets didn't know how to react to lockdowns. We thought it was, the rhetoric was essentially that the world economy had hit the pause button. And so markets and futures were soaring. We had negative prices on oil. It was a really turbulent time in the markets, but things recovered. The markets kept churning on, and the continuing trend you saw in the American political economy where larger and larger corporations were flexing their power to continue to grow and evade antitrust scrutiny, they've been able to grow and succeed out of this economy. I'm talking your Amazons, your Apples, Googles, all these big companies. And the downside of this is that if these companies, some companies are growing bigger and bigger, other companies are going smaller and dying. And so you get these distressed assets like GameStop is one. We mentioned Nokia and BlackBerry, the phone companies, AMC, the movie theater company, similarly hit very hard because of COVID-19 and replaced essentially through streaming giants such as Disney, AT&T through their ownership of HBO. All these other different market pressures are going on. So you have these cocky hedge fund managers who are saying, if you're investing in GameStop and AMC, you're a sucker, you're a loser, you don't know what you're talking about. I think suckers at the poker game was one phrase, but meanwhile, at Wall Street Bets, where you have this home of renegade financial information, they were looking up these public records about who had taken different positions or market positions on different stocks. And they found out that a certain hedge fund, Melvin Capital, I believe was, before we get into too much of the jargon, basically the hedge fund Melvin Capital was over-leveraged and over-betting on GameStop's demise. So it was a opportunity for Wall Street Bets to take advantage of that. And I'll pause right here before there are any questions, but that's kind of where we start to kick off.
So, you know, there's this idea, there's these records showing that this hedge fund has just massively shorted GameStop. And then what? It would be one thing for, you know, a handful of people to just sink some money into it. But what happened really seemed, you know, I don't want to be overly dramatic and say something like cultural revolution. I don't know if it was quite that. but it was kind of this, you know, I think eye-opening moment for a lot of people. How quickly did that happen? You know, for somebody who is not involved in that community or wasn't really paying attention to it, it felt like it happened overnight. Was that the case?
I mean, almost. It was a big reckoning sort of moment online. And I guess as a side note, because I always try to make economic concepts simple and approachable because I have a whole ethos about this. A quick question for you, Jared. Do you like golf or tennis? Or do you play those sports? Do you have any interest in them?
I played golf growing up, but I can't say that I'm like an avid sportsman.
The reason I ask is because golf and tennis have previously been seen as these country club sports, these sports of elitism. And there's been force over decades to keep it that way, to keep it something that is only kept for the upper class and for the elites. Lately, there's been a movement to sort of democratize these sports, say, hey, these things aren't complicated. In fact, they're simple. It's easy for people to get involved in, and why not spread the fun around? And I think there's a really similar ethos between that and what happened here with Wall Street Bets was you basically have the democratization of information on Reddit with a bunch of people saying, hey, here's a fun thing to do where we can fuck over a hedge fund. If we buy shares in GameStop, we'll drive up the price of GameStop shares. Because this hedge fund took out a short position, they bet against the idea of GameStop shares succeeding and going up. They were put under a short squeeze scenario wherein this hedge fund was now responsible for the price that these shares had now increased times the number of shares that were outstanding and bought. So Melvin Capital all of a sudden became on the hook for $2-3 billion like almost overnight, because you had this united group of Redditors who found a way to manipulate the stock market in a way that, by the way, these hedge funds and many others in the stock market do on a day-to-day basis. That's one thing I want to make clear. Yeah.
They do this all the time. I mean, if you're a hedge fund and you've got billions of dollars at your disposal, you can manipulate stocks just through the act of your purchase power.
And not only can you, that's what you're expected to do as a hedge fund. Like most, the quote-unquote conservative estimate, investment, the conservative investment that you make is in stocks and bonds, which over a long period of time generally deliver modest returns. But for people who want to make more bucks, they go for the riskier assets. And that's kind of where hedge funds come in. And so hedge funds use every unorthodox, quote-unquote, method that is legal or otherwise available to put their thumb on the scales of the markets. And if that means taking out these wild short positions, and then before this GameStop scenario happened, putting their own thumb on the scales to make sure the prices continue to go down. This is something that, again, a lot of the backlash that came from this, from Wall Street, was mostly over the fact that the poors found out the trick, essentially.
Right. Any sort of like mass mobilization always sort of ruffles the feathers of the upper echelons. Something I wanted to also ask about, like this started with GameStop, but it expanded into other things like BlackBerry, Nokia, and even like Dogecoin, which if you're not familiar, it's basically like a parody of Bitcoin. Do you think that would be a fair way to describe it, Dan?
I think it's Bitcoin, but all in every single way better.
This is kind of the part that's so interesting to me, because these Redditors were able to successfully exert their influence. I mean, quite noticeably, it's the stock market. You can see the line go up, right? They were able to kind of in real time influence this stock. And then it became this, it almost felt like a miniature gold rush or something, where I was seeing people from that I went to high school with who are not financial experts, like arguing on Facebook comment posts about like whether they should hold or buy GameStop or AMC. Or it's like, it was just such a bizarre thing to watch spread. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts about like the expansion of this beyond the subreddit. Like it kind of became this miniature cultural moment.
Yeah, and I think that cultural moment existed because of the cultural moment we're also existing in. And by that I mean when people see an opportunity to make an extra couple of bucks, and B, stick it to these out-of-touch hedge fund billionaires who Americans have been building resentment over arguably since the 1980s, but definitely since the 2008 financial collapse and recession. That one-two punch kind of made this a cultural flashpan. This was also happening during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is the great third character in all of this. And so I think people's desperation also highlighted people's rush and people's excitement around this. I knew a lot of people, I think a funny meme that was going around was saying, hey, if GameStop stock doesn't go up, we're getting the stimulus one way or another. Like, this was people's almost response to the fact that the government was not acting quickly enough to provide stimulus checks for Americans, and even going down from $2,000 that was promised during the Democratic Senate race down to what, $1,400 now, and all that other thing. So amidst this economic anxiety, rising levels of potentially evictions and things like that going around the country, people losing jobs and have been out of jobs for a while, and the unemployment insurance during this pandemic in the United States has been woefully inadequate, then all of a sudden comes this moment to where you can potentially make money and fuck over billionaires at the same time. Like, there's just something so sexy about that concept, and it's the same kind of sexiness that finance people who are around that get concerned about, because like any sort of casino or lottery, there's very few winners and an awful lot of losers. So that made it kind of the double-edged sword aspect of things.
Speaking of billionaires, a few notable ones kind of sounded off in support of what was happening. I know Elon Musk tweeted, I think it was Game Stonks or something like that, and then like the the stock price shot.
Meme King, Elon Musk.
The stock price shot up. It's ridiculous. But
I don't get why the SEC doesn't just have tweet notifications on for Elon Musk.
I'm sure someone in that building does. But
poor someone.
Yeah, it's just some like poor SEC, like mid-management person getting their phone lighting up in the middle of meetings with like epic bacon narwhals and just being like, I swear, I mean, sometimes this manipulates the market. But
what's Clubhouse?
You know, I'm curious, like, there were folks like Kevin O'Leary, Mark Cuban, Elon Musk. They kind of sounded off like in support of what was happening. And I'm curious your personal thoughts on whether that was sort of like a almost like pandering move, or if that was genuine, or I mean, what are we supposed to make of that? You know, this is ostensibly like this movement, this digital movement of people that are leveraging their, you know, collective power as retail investors to swing the stock market and, you know, wield it like a wrecking ball. What's it say, or does it say anything, if Elon Musk, who I believe is currently the world's richest human, is like trying to get in on this?
Yeah, I think there was a very quick alignment around the same kinds of people you would usually expect to be not necessarily morally credible or people we would like, but people we would say, hey, love them or hate them, they're definitely savvy to public opinion and pressure. So of course there was a lot of hubbub about AOC talking about regulating the actions that Robinhood took when they halted trading on some of these meme stocks like GameStop and AMC and Dogecoin. And when Ted Cruz jumped in and saying, hey, I might agree with this. And you had even people like Donald Trump and Barstool Sports president, whatever, Portnoy, that guy, all agreeing. It was very much strange bedfellows. And it was very interesting to see more so, not even just the politicians who would usually, or political figures who would usually defend the billionaire class, but to see members of the billionaire class, like you mentioned, Mark Cuban, Elon Musk, who himself through Tesla has benefited a lot from the retail investing boom, and the fact that random people can be enamored by the cult of Elon Musk and then decide to spend their hard-earned money on shares in Tesla, and some of them have even made money off of that. So there's of course, some self-serving thing to be had here on a individual basis. Mark Cuban and Chamath, the person you were talking about, they tend to like to be on the other side, almost the quote-unquote conscious capitalists side of things. Because I think they and all the other people who are hedge fund managers and big financiers on Wall Street see a lot of the writing on the wall for what this moment was and how quickly the public writ large, left and right politically, was ready to turn against this class, this billionaire class of people. And this was something that was festering in 2008, 2010 during Occupy Wall Street that I think a lot of people and onlookers to politics thought was going to be over by that time. It had settled down and maybe developed into some nascent political movements here or there. But that anger has never truly gone away. And a lot of that economic progress that would have been had had that recession not hit during the tens in the past decade is still being felt by late Gen X, millennials, even some Zoomers now. And that anger is very palpable and it's very easy to explain to everyday Americans, more so than the political divisions that we have. So if I can maybe make even a summation about those things, I think these billionaires know what side they are on and they know that other people are in, you know, a roundabout way. If Robin Hood and retail investing accidentally brings about class consciousness, then I think that's a very funny way for Marxist like economic progress to occur. But I guess God bless. But they see that there is this rising discontent and pressure against the billionaire class. And they at least rhetorically want to be on the, better side of the guillotines as opposed to the other side of the guillotines. And whether or not that is really truthful coming from them, I think can be said in the actions and behaviors and investments of folks like Mark Cuban and Elon Musk.
I think that's a good point. Like rhetorically, I'm with you. If this whole event opens people's eyes to like wealth inequality or just how much of the stock market is just like a fucking casino where the house always wins. I'll take it, right? Like, you know, maybe that can be used for something good. But I think that these frustrations are very deeply held. And, you know, for every Elon game stonks tweet there were people on CNBC like bawling or comparing. I think my favorite one was I saw somebody compare the Redditors on Wall Street bets to the people who stormed the U.S. Capitol. I'll play a clip of that now.
It really puts a lot of question about the integrity of the market, right? And it really kind of, everybody's scratching their heads over this. What should happen? What is the right thing to do to control this or stop this? Not unlike what we saw on January 6th at the Capitol, right? If you don't have the police in there at the right time, things go a little crazy. And that's kind of feels like what's happening with this, much different, much lesser degree. It's financial harm, not personal bodily harm. But certainly that's the same kind of, you know, platform created frenzy that people are operating under. And these are very trying times.
So Dan, what do you think? You know, you've been kind of simping for Wall Street bets now. Are you an insurrectionist against the stock market?
I would love to go on a riff, but at this point, the capital insurrection is so serious that I'm pretty sure I'd get censored out of this fine podcast. But no, and I think, you know, as we're seeing a lot of bad faith attempts to rewrite what happened on January 6th in the Capitol, especially as there is incredible reporting uncovering some of the details as the dust is settling from the Capitol, it's kind of like, as we said earlier, these billionaires have a class stance and they understand very much where they are in the class war. And they are making maneuvers and strategies right now to continue on, I guess, their soft war, which is a rhetorical strategy in convincing the rubes and the plebes that this system that is routinely fucking them is actually fair, and their 0.001% chance at making it is the way it should be. And they're gonna obviously try to stir the pot in the same ways that like everyone stirs the pot, by like confusing these political movements and mixing it up so you're getting past the point of what you're saying. Wealth inequality has increased and gotten so insane to the point where it seems almost unsustainable without a radical rethinking of our economy. And that radical rethinking of our economy means all of these billionaires who are used to extreme amounts of wealth may, you know, if things go our way, may only exist and with, you know, modest amounts of wealth. And they'd still live relatively luxurious lives and everything, but they'd just pay extremely more taxes and the society as a whole would be better. But it's a slow-going revolution that if they let us know that it's possible, then there's no stopping it.
So, you know, I guess as we wrap up here, you know, what lessons should the non-finance rube like myself take away here? I feel like you've touched on this a little bit, but to somebody who is, you know, perhaps just learning about this right now while listening to this podcast, you know, what are the takeaways? You know, like what are we to make of this? Is this a lasting thing? Was this a flash in the pan? I mean, to a big degree, you know, neither one of us can predict the future, but you know, what's it feel like in your gut?
Yeah, so there was questioning and in fact a lot of excitement about the idea that, you know, we are now just in the meme stocks era now, and we'll just have to face these brigades every once in a while where Redditors just decide to get a vendetta against some hedge fund here or there, and they use the power of the masses to manipulate the stock market. And that, as the days went by, end up not being the case. It's sort of a economics 101 kind of lesson. When you don't have the momentum and when that momentum is dispersed, the power of the markets and the diluting aspect of the markets kind of continues. And people who held on to GameStop stock out of a manner of principle have seen much of that value wiped away. And so it goes to show that while these things are very complicated and you can stand to lose money if you don't know what you're doing and you invest too late, it goes back to my golf or tennis analogy. These are things, and the financial markets are things that have historically, since the 1970s, been made less about moral philosophy, the original idea about economics and political economy, and more about financialization and creating these new financial instruments and securities that multiply on top of each other, and these derivatives that make the financial markets more complex and, by extent, less accessible to regular people like you and me. And the moral of the story is that a lot of that complexity is just there to make it non-approachable. Like, there's no reason tennis needs to be scored as, like, 15, love, 30, 40, all. Like, it's just scored the way it is. But eventually, once you play it and learn the rules, you find that, oh, this isn't that hard. It's something that's accessible and something that I can do and take advantage of and have power in. And I don't think that means that every American should like read up and become a day trader, but I think that means that every American, especially every intelligent person listening to this podcast, should take economic dogma, the things that are treated as always truths about our economy, and be a little bit skeptical about it, because the economy is truly us making it up as we go along. It's we establish the markets and hopefully the markets keep going in perpetuity. But the world has changed since we developed a lot of the fundamental rules of economics that we have right now. And we're finding out that you can spend large amounts of money and run up the debt in certain cases, and things don't go bad in other aspects of your economy. So maybe we can be a little bit more careful about that. But it's these beliefs about the economy that are longstanding and said on TV by people we think are authorities on the matter, combined by our belief, ours a public's belief, that all of these economic concepts are far beyond our reach and far beyond our grasp, and we can't possibly understand these. It's that sort of belief, that subtle manufacturing of consent, that allows a lot of the economic injustice to continue in our society. And if we're at least awake enough to start questioning that, to say, hey, I don't believe that aspect of economic dogma is necessarily true, or how about we question this concept or this line of thinking where we always have to have tax cuts instead of government spending, then we can actually start to unleash so much more in policy and in government and what we can do as a country if we just start to question that a little bit more.
Right, because it's not just, you know, sort of the manufacture of consent in the way that people think that it is beyond their control or, you know, somehow just something they won't be able to understand. Those beliefs also feed into this thought that there's nothing that anybody can really do about it. But I think, you know, at least my takeaway from this whole saga that I hope sticks with people is the realization that, you know, we do have power to shape what the economy looks like. It can be something stupid like buying Dogecoin and screaming that you're going to ride it to the fucking moon, right? But it's it can also be like collective action and pressuring lawmakers to make the kind of regulatory changes that we want to see. And I tend to think that those changes are inevitable and that we should follow the first rule of crisis PR, which is figure out where you're eventually going to have to go and get there as fast as possible. But, you know, it remains to be seen. The American public's inability to rally behind common cause never ceases to disappoint me. And on that cheery note, Dan, you told me you listened to the show before, so you probably know the last question I'm about to ask you. It's the same one every guest gets. Dan, from the internet, what's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
The honorable moment has finally arrived. I think related to these things, my favorite thing on the internet is Stock Talk. Are you aware of this?
No, I'm not.
It's basically the part of TikTok that are all investors and like 17-year-olds who took a high school economics class and then are explaining the stock markets. I'm talking this whole episode about how I love financial literacy and teaching people, demystifying the financial markets. I'm really passionate about that as a topic. That being said, a lot of this TikTok stuff is really bad financial advice. And because I know not to take it, it's funny enough to go. Like, I'm talking videos where they're like, this is how stocks work. The green line means they're going up. The red line means they're going down. You buy it when it's red and sell it when it's green, and then you make money. And that's the video. And then people are in the comments, man, going, I lost $1,000, man. What's going on?
What's happening?
Yeah, so my gallows humor ask, it's a very much enjoyment out of that, which is to say, folks, be very careful with your money.
Yes, please be very careful. Please seek any financial advice that you may want from a professional.
Like Pierre.
Like Pierre, little Pomeranian. Also, very adept advisor to several large hedge funds. I've been talking to Dan, probably know him as Dan from the internet. He's the host of TDIF, The Power Report, an audio face. All of those projects are very cool. I'm personally a fan of audio face if I need a hot music take. You guys,
hell yeah,
seemingly review like every single piece of music that I seem to be interested in at the time. So it's cool to get like the context and sort of a take on it.
I'd love to hear that, Jared. Thank you very much. And yeah, just follow me on Twitter at Dan from the Web if you want links to any of my myriad of ways I fill my heart. So, thank you. But I'm just gonna pray he bless. Wish I had time to hate this shit. I'm busy chasing greatnessness. I'm trading when the fate begins and selling when they duck kick it. I be talking options, I got lots of those in life. I could get you started, but I can't teach you to drive. I turn on my mind, it doesn't swear I come alive. Cash is always liquid, always dripping, never dry.
If you like this show, go to shtpost.substack.com where you can sign up to receive updates whenever new episodes drop. Additionally, for paying supporters of the show at $40 a year or a monthly rate, you can sign up to get newsletters in between episode releases. If you like the show and you want to support it and help it grow and keep going, sign up at shtpost.substack.com.